This morning is United States v. McKnight, case number 10-2297. Mr. McGowan, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel, my name is Andrew McGowan. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Andre McKnight. This appeal concerns a jury instruction that informed the jury that they were not to consider the government's deceptive investigative practices. The government asked this court to uphold this instruction, even though there was insufficient evidence to support it, and even though there's a substantial likelihood that it interfered with the jury's ability to evaluate the credibility of the only government witness to implicate Mr. Knight in drug dealing, Sean Denton. There was insufficient evidence to support this instruction. The simple fact that the government employed these deceptive techniques should not be enough. The government recognized this in the district court when the government added to its request that some jurors may have problems with the government's investigative practices. However, there is no evidence in the record that any juror did have problems with it. Moreover, the few cases that discuss this type of instruction almost uniformly feature a defense attack on the government investigative techniques. That didn't occur in this case either. The government obtained a motion in limine, and defense counsel agreed not to attack the government's investigative tactics.
Are we talking about anything in this case more than just, you know, the usual use of wiretaps and undercover agents?
We are. The instruction does seem to focus on what happened during the government's obtaining evidence like wiretaps and that sort of thing. The problem in this case is that they also used Sean Denton to interpret those phone calls. Not only did he interpret what was actually said on the phone calls, but what they meant. His testimony was actually, or his information, was the glue that allowed the government to actually bring this case, in my opinion. It provided background for the Victor Thompson conspiracy that they've been investigating for 10 years, but had no controlled buys on Victor Thompson. And in fact, his statements are the only thing that ties Mr. McKnight to drug dealing. Now, it is true that there are 40 calls that have Mr. McKnight's voice on them. However, I've tried to outline a number of these phone calls in my brief. They're not that clear. Without some information from somebody else saying that this had to do with drug dealing.
Well, the instruction, that you're challenging didn't have anything to do with how the jury was to evaluate the credibility of Denton as a witness, right?
Right, and there was a particular instruction about his
testimony. Normal, you know, be careful, this is, you know,
exactly.
Cautious, this should be viewed with caution and so forth, as is always given in a case like this. The instruction really was limited to the investigative techniques that were used in the field as opposed to what the prosecution presented to the jury.
I believe it's not limited to the field, unfortunately, because it's broad enough to include an investigative technique that allows the government to rely on a liar, a drug dealer, a thug, to provide them all the information.
That's not what it says.
To provide all the information. It isn't what it says. But, I mean, the investigative techniques of the investigation, in my mind, I can't imagine a juror that wouldn't consider the government's use of somebody who's cooperating to give a background for the investigation, to tell the government what these phone calls were about, isn't part of the investigative techniques. And even if there is some concern because the jury instruction doesn't say those particular things, I mean, we're talking about 12 people who are completely outside of the record in terms of what they talked about. And my point is that anything that might have interfered with their ability to avoid, to interpret the credibility or to evaluate the credibility of anything that Sean Denton said would interfere with their ability to evaluate the evidence in this case because it was so important to the government's case.
Well, is it your argument that this instruction to the jury that it should disregard any impressions it might have based on the nature of the investigative techniques had some effect of bolstering Denton's testimony? Is that your claim? I'm having a bit of difficulty kind of...
Bolstering is a little strong. What I'm worried about is that the jury looked at this and said, well, we're supposed to be able to value his testimony. But he gave information to the government beforehand. We're not supposed to consider that. And I can understand, but his testimony was pretty much what he gave the government in the first place. I can understand that concern. At the same time, his testimony at trial was based entirely on what he told the government in the first place. It's consistent with his wanting to get a break. If it were inconsistent with what he told the government in the first place, he would not be able to get a downward departure or a lower sentence.
Okay.
And my point is garbage in, garbage out.
Okay, so this, to paraphrase your argument, you're suggesting that this argument had the effect of telling the jury to disregard the fact that the government flipped this guy.
No.
No?
What I'm concerned about is that there is a difference between the jury's ability to evaluate his testimony, his credibility.
Right, and one large factor in evaluating his credibility is the fact that the government flipped this guy.
No, true. No, I grant
that. And
he
was getting credit for, or ostensibly getting credit for his cooperation. Right?
Right. But the problem is, it is, to my mind, it could be very confusing to a juror to say, well, Denton did give them information that could be very, that's part of the investigation. I mean, it's when the government's gathering its information, knowing what the people were saying and why they were saying it, it's got to be part of the investigation. The question is, okay, we're supposed to evaluate his testimony, and he testified to some things. But what about the stuff that he gave the government, including the agent's testimony that he believed him when he was giving his evidence before the trial to the government? And, I mean, this is a kind of a unique case in that the government relies so entirely on his testimony to prosecute Mr. McKnight. And my
Are you
point
worried
is,
that the instruction would... perhaps discount the aggressive cross-examination of the witness, that let's just say you cross-examined and did some things that conflicted or did whatever to cause the jury to question his credibility. Are you worried that this instruction would say, well, it would somehow take away from whatever the effect the cross-examination had? I'm just trying to figure out what the impact. The instruction doesn't look very helpful to me, frankly, and maybe even confusing. I'm not sure it's a good instruction, but I'm just wondering what the harm it might do.
My harm, the harm that I'm worried about is something along those lines, although, you know, the jury's assumed to follow the instructions, and the instruction about taking his testimony with care and caution is, you know, this usual standard instruction. And I'm assuming that they followed that instruction. My problem with this investigative technique instruction is that it could have interfered with the jury's ability to evaluate the information that he gave them in the first place. True, his testimony was consistent with that, I'm assuming, for the most part, although we know that his information to the government changed even while he was giving it to them, that the interpretation of the phone calls changed. But anything that could interfere with the jury's ability to evaluate anything that he said, whether it was before the trial or during the trial or anything that he said that came up either through the agent's testimony or through his own testimony, would have affected Mr. McKnight's rights to a fair trial.
Is the normal thing that you would expect in a witness would be some longtime agent who could translate what they're saying to each other, and they're saying, here's what that means on the street or something. I don't know all of what they were trying to say, what he meant. I know there's a certain language there that sometimes is confusing. But so we've seen this in the past where an agent will say, yeah, in my experience, here's what this word code word means and that kind of stuff. Is that what should have been done instead of what they did?
Your Honor, actually... that would have been one thing, although the language in this case was kind of particular to it that I've been able to see. And it was, I'm sure it was a relief to them to have somebody who could interpret it for them. Now, I don't know if the government could have come up with agents who would be able to interpret those phrases as
no,
well.
I don't know. I can assure you I don't know.
But at the same time, the instruction itself, it's the last sentence that's the most problematic. It's the one that says you cannot, you shouldn't consider it. I'm paraphrasing it. There's a case. I see my time's up.
All right, thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. The district court properly instructed the jury that the propriety of the tactics used by the government to investigate this case should not enter into its deliberations. The challenged instruction informed the jury that it was not improper or illegal for the government to employ investigative tactics that deceive, and that whether or not the jury approved of the use of those tactics were irrelevant to their task. The instruction correctly stated the law, and given all of the other instructions in the case, and I'd point specifically to the caution and great care instruction that related to Sean Denton's testimony, those instructions taken all together ensured that the techniques used by the government to gather evidence in this case would have no relevance or impact on the jury's deliberations.
What's being referred to here?
Specifically, the wiretap telephone calls and then a series of recordings made by a confidential informant, not Sean Denton, but a separate confidential informant, who made a series of recordings over two controlled buys. The jury heard evidence of all of those recordings at the trial.
Was there any suggestion that those techniques were being questioned, the propriety of those techniques were being questioned?
No. And to be clear, at the jury instruction conference, the defense counsel made that point to the district court judge. But I think what's important to keep in mind is that it is not uncommon for members of the veneer or members of the jury to have such concerns about the use of deceptive law enforcement practices. That it
usually you voir dire for that, right?
And that is correct. In this particular case, the voir dire was not specifically asked whether or not any members of the panel had issues with Title III wiretaps or secretly recorded conversations. But again, it's not unreasonable to believe that there could be members of the jury who might have issues with the fact that there were 37 secretly recorded telephone calls in which Mr. McKnight was speaking in code.
Is this instruction commonly used in drug conspiracy cases that involve wiretaps and confidential informants, which is to say all of them?
I think that I can't say how common it is. I can say that I know that it's frequently used in cases in which the jury will hear wiretap telephone calls in which there would be evidence that the government, through an agent, made a one-sided presentation to a district court judge and sought authorization to overhear telephone calls.
Well, the judge said he used it before or seen it before or something, but it doesn't look like it's something used all the time, and that might be a good idea not to use it all the time.
And I think it's fair to say that it is not necessarily an appropriate instruction in all cases. I think that this instruction was offered in this case because the jury did hear these secretly recorded telephone
conversations. Right, but that's always the case. That's the import of my question. I mean, the jury is always going to be hearing this kind of evidence in a drug conspiracy case. And so your argument, and so far as I can see, there's nothing specific about the facts of this case that would warrant this kind of thumb on the scales, which is clearly what it is. And so your argument has to be that this is okay in all drug conspiracy cases, not just that it's okay here.
I can't say whether or not it's appropriate in all cases. I do think it was appropriate in this particular case, but Your Honor is correct.
Well, give me something factually distinct about this case. We're going to issue a ruling on this, a decision in this case, and if we say, it's okay for reasons highly specific to this case, that's one thing. If there isn't anything in particular that distinguishes the evidence in this case from every other drug conspiracy case, then it's a blanket authorization.
And I understand that, and I would agree. And you're right. There is nothing specific to this case. There is no special circumstance about the evidence used here other than to say, and again, it's true in many cases, but other than to say that there are jurors who might have some concerns about the fact that the government was recording conversations on someone's telephone without that person's knowledge. And instructing the jury most specifically, put those to the side. Those are not, your approval or disapproval of those techniques should not enter into your deliberations.
So your position, the government's position, is that this instruction is appropriate in all cases where wiretaps come in?
I think that it was appropriate in this case. I don't want to say that it's appropriate in all cases because I don't know. But it is. I will admit that it is frequently used and it is you know often given. Unless the panel has any further questions, the government would rest on its brief and ask that the conviction and sentence be affirmed.
You're confessing error on the second issue.
With regard to the inmate financial responsibility, yes, we would confess error. Yes.
It has to be fixed.
Correct. And we believe it can be done here. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McGowan, your time had expired, but I'll give you a minute in rebuttal if you have anything to add.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to add that cases that the government relied on, the district court cases, were all from the Northern District. I will also add that it's been my experience that this instruction is only given in the Northern District. Thank you.
Thank you. And our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.